This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn and Xiaoning. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be speaking about the cancelled Dongzhong meeting with columnist Nathaniel Tan, who moderated the Jiaoyi Forum last week. But in the meantime, let's take a look at some other local news. Now, Dato' Sri Anifa Aman, who was the foreign minister and a former deputy trade minister and deputy transport minister, now he has applied to stay the Kimanis parliamentary by-election pending a review of a federal court ruling. Now, Free Malaysia Today reported that it cited a notice of motion filed by Anifa's lawyers. So the notice said that there are special circumstances to stay the by-election until the review application is heard and disposed of.
Now, a lawyer for the Election Commission said that the federal court will hear Anifa's application for a stay of the by-election tomorrow. The lawyer said the EC will oppose the stay application. Now, the new FMT also reported that lawyers for Warisan's Karim Bujang, who filed a petition to call for the by-election, will also oppose Anifa's move. Now, on a side note, the former foreign minister has also said that he fully backs Barisan Nasional in the upcoming Kimanis by-election. This statement comes after he decided against contesting for the Kimanis seat that he has held for two decades. On his discussions with UMNO's President Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi, he said that he received assurances that there would be solutions to the issues that are dear to all Sabahans.
Yeah, so this is an interesting situation because I'm very curious as to what are these special circumstances that the FMT is reporting on. Because if we look at the reason that the GE14 results in Kimanis were voided in the first place, it was because the election court found instances of where I think 300 voters cast their ballots improperly, if I'm not mistaken.
And his majority was very thin.
It was very thin. It was around 200 votes, if I'm not mistaken. So you can see where those 300 votes, perhaps, you know, in a constituency like Petaling Jaya, which is massive, that may not have made a difference. But somewhere like Kimanis, where the majority was so thin, it could actually have turned the tide of the election. So I can see why the election court and the election commission would have thought that it would be reasonable to void this and hold a by-election. So I would be very interested to hear
what are his reasons.
But he has also said that he's not going to be contesting, which is an interesting move.
Did he go independent?
He did go independent a few months after GE14. So he was he was one of a number of UMNO moderates who quit the party after GE. Another one was Dato' Sri Mustafa Mohamed, who commonly known as Tok Pa, who was the international trade minister. He also quit and went independent before subsequently joining Bersatu.
Well, we'll just have to watch this space, right? Because we should and we will be following the Kimanis by-elections in January if it does happen. because it's always going to be interesting to see the outcome of another by-election, and this time who wins and by how much majority.
Yeah, and I think following up on Tanjung Piai, everyone's going to be watching this to see if there is another, basically a repeat of this. Obviously Sabah is a little bit different compared to Peninsula Malaysia. So generally, Sabah and Sarawak politics run quite differently. So that's also going to be an additional element to consider.
Well, I think there will be other issues, right? I mean, of course, one of which that they constantly talk about is the illegal immigrants, and then the MA63. Those issues have yet to be resolved. I think those are very much Sabah's own domestic issues, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think also still things are common themes, whether it's Peninsula or whether it's East Malaysia, would be bread and butter. How's the economy doing? The cost of living? How's your job situation? I think those issues will be also repeated, whether Sabah, Sarawak or even here.
Yeah, so we are starting to see analysts coming out with their views on who they think is going to come out on top in the Kimanis by-election. Some are saying, and it appears to be quite split, because they do have, Parti Warisan Sabah does have its supporters. And on the other hand, others may say that, hey, you know, this protest vote against Pakatan Harapan may continue to swing votes in UMNO's favour over in Sabah. So that's going to be, if this stay application does not go ahead, Currently, the by-election is scheduled for January 18th,
yes,
which means that we will start to see a nomination and campaign period, the end of campaigning, almost as soon as we start 2020.
Yeah, so, the first election of the new year.
I know. So if you adhere to the adage that you start the year as you mean to go on, you know, what does this say for Malaysia in 2020, that we're starting it off with a by-election?
I don't know how many more by-elections are there going to be for the rest of the year. But it'll be interesting to see what Pakatan Harapan does as a political unit this time. There were issues that they said they were quite complacent about Tanjung Piai. The leadership wasn't there. So let's see what happens in Sabah.
Indeed. Now, also this morning, taking a look at another local story. So last Friday, Bank Negara Malaysia issued a draft framework to establish an innovative application of technology in the financial sector. So they plan to issue 5 licenses to establish digital banks to conduct either conventional or Islamic banking businesses here in Malaysia. Now, Bank Islam Chief Economist Dr. Muhammad Afzanizam said that this move would intensify rivalries within the bank sector as non-traditional players eventually and gradually start to make inroads into the industry.
Now, the entrance of non-bank players already, like in the form of e-wallets, is already sucking millions from banks and transferring them into new payment mediums. So we do see banking sector already facing thinner margins and challenging profits. But of course, that's also a function of the interest rate environment and also the economic slowdown. So loans growth has been rather anemic and non-interest margins have come down.
And there was already some discussion about whether or not, you know, considering the difficult climate for banks right now, whether or not we would start to see mergers and consolidation happening. So how much more likely is this going to be now that BNM has said that, hey, you know, we are also going to be bringing digital banks into the picture and further complicating the situation for the traditional banking players?
I think it'd be interesting to see who applies for these 5 digital banking licenses, whether it's going to be sometimes in some jurisdictions, you actually see traditional banks teaming up with a non-traditional but a digital player to bid for one license, or is it really just going to be the likes of non-banks? So I think in Singapore there was discussion that Grab was looking at one of these digital licenses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but at the end of the day, Bank Negara has to measure this or balance this with the capitalization requirements, right? Because you're still talking about banks. People still need to feel that there is this framework in which they can trust, and that, you know, that if there's any issues, you know, there will be resolved, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a bank, whether it's digital or physical.
Yeah, and these players will still be responsible for people's monies and livelihoods. So right, BNM has said that for these digital banks, an asset threshold of not more than 2 billion ringgit in the initial 3 to 5 years of operations will be applied. So this essentially functions as like a foundational phase for the licensees to demonstrate that they can do work, that they're a viable and sound operation, right? So and it will also allow BNM to observe their performance and I guess get a handle on any of the risks associated with that particular non-bank player.
Yeah, and they also require the digital banks to maintain a minimal capital funds unimpaired by losses of 100 million during the foundational phase and 300 million after. So this is quite a high threshold. This kind of weeds out all these players who perhaps don't have the capital funding behind them. So, you know, I'm interested who these 5 players will be, because when, of course, if you talk about it in US dollars terms, it's not a lot. But when you need 100 million set aside, 100 million ringgit set aside, doing absolutely nothing, this will certainly only attract possibly candidates of a certain caliber. It just won't be anybody, right? Because you're talking about 100 million that you can't touch, that you can't use.
Yeah, so this is essentially as a safeguard measure, right? So there has been some consideration of who's going to be applying for these licenses. You know, that's currently the focus of a lot of analysts' time and efforts right now. But in the short term, though, MIDF, Amanah Investment Bank have said that, you know, they don't expect the establishment of digital banks to impact traditional banks, because they would also, these digital banks would also be limited in the kind of activities that they can do based on the exposure draft issued by the central bank. And he added that the senior analyst Imran Yassin also did echo that opinion, that actually that asset threshold of not more than 2 billion is quite a small amount.
Well, in the world of banking, yeah, it's a small amount. I'm going to be interested to see what the take-up rate will be, you know, for young Malaysians or even old Malaysians. Is it going to be something that people are willing to consider? Because it's still your livelihood, right? Your savings all in there, right? And it has to be proven that it's also super convenient, right? Because if you look at some of the models in UK, some of these digital banks that have no physical presence, they still work with physical banks so that you can withdraw money from mm-hmm. ATMs. The websites have to be superior. Sometimes the rates they offer have to be even better. So yeah, maybe a little bit of competition in the banking space is good for Malaysians.
All right, and this is indeed something we will be watching very closely. But right now we're heading into the 7:30 news. And up next, we'll be recapping the Brexit developments of 2019. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.